Coming up on the podcast, Warrington scrape a messy win following a forward pass, 12 good men, and a drop goal from a very flaky Blake. Super League receives a clusterfuck of COVID cases. Just what is the average IQ of you, our podcast listener? Daniel decides which teams are hot and which are not. And Gary's popped into Rimmer's lot, only to become a little deflated. Plus, Wyatt and the podcast are set for a week off, or possibly even the season. This is What Would Brian Bevan Say? Hello, I'm Rob London, and with Wire playing at the Totally Wicked Stadium, we're here to podcast you a wicked spell of rugby league. So talking of wickedness, where are my two little devils? First up, his statistics come with so many noughts after the decimal point that some would say his factual naughtiness knows no bounds. It's Sam Satan Sankey!
Hello, Rob. How are you? How are things in Sydney today?
Well, I've got a blocked ear, mate, so I'm struggling to hear tonight. So, although, having said that, I wish I'd had two blocked ears last night, having to listen to Terry and Barry go on for 80 minutes. So,
They make us sound almost intelligent, don't they?
Well, let's not go that far, Sam. Let's not go that far. And also, with a devilish glint in his eye, I know that's not two horns growing out of the top of his head, because the last time this old lad was horny was when Angela Rippon showed off her legs on the Morecambe and Wise show. Yes, it's Dennis Beelzebub Waywell.
All right.
How are you, my little devil?
Well, I might have to just start with an official statement. I think you've decided that I'm not doing tackle bags this week, so I'll just read my barrister's letter. He says, basically, you'll be issued with a summons and a series of complaints will be following in the next couple of weeks. So I know it's a visual guy, but there you go.
Well, the reason we did it, Dennis, the reason we dropped tackle bags for you was because we're bringing versatility to the podcast. We're trying to rotate the squad now with a long sort of session coming up. So yeah, that's why we did.
I know. But I'll be wearing these complaint glasses for the next four or five episodes. So you can describe them if you like. Can you describe them?
It's back to front here because I'm in Australia. Oh. It says TNUC. Is that some kind of trade union?
That's it. Yes, it's a trade union of uncut censorship.
Let's move on to the game. The Wire team was Ratchford, Charnley, Marmo, who seemed to have three R's placed in his name yesterday, King, Lynham, Austin, Widdop, Hill, Daryl Clark, Cooper. In the second row, we had Curry and Ben Murdoch-Masilla, and we moved Hughes to the loose forward position. Interchange bench was Philbin, Akawala, Walker, and Jason Clark. Final score was Huddersfield 18, Warrington 19. Let's have a listen to the highlights and then we'll review.
From both coaches, and 10 minutes for Ben Murdoch-Masilla. So a sending off, a red card for Phil Clark. One. 7 metres or so away from that Warrington line. O'Brien, short ball, and it's Akumatai who's going to get over. Blake Austin, the second Warrington player, follows Ben Murdoch-Masilla into the sin bin. Lack of composure, really. Widdop puts boot to ball. It's a really nice kick, and Ben Curry is on the end of it. Clark found Marmo, Curry found King. It's through the gap. Gareth Widdop with the step. Gareth Widdop with the try. And Warrington with the perfect start to the second half. Lawrence, Caesar, effortlessly away from one, great ball over the top, McGill Fred will go in for the Giants, denied a moment ago, but Jermaine McGill Fred, over. rid of Tom Holmes in the tackle as well. Did it to line. This is Widham now. And great pass away to King. And Toby King cuts inside. Warrington attacking in the blink of an eye. This is breathtaking. And Lynham is away. And Lynham will go in for a sensational try for Warrington. Last one. O'Brien. Cudjoe now. Cudjoe trying to step his way around. There's three of them in there. Dumps the ball over the top. And Russell will go in for the Huddersfield Giants on the last tackle. Austin is there, he's deep central position, he's gone for it, Austin! And Austin has landed the drop goal for Warrington, Blake Austin!
It was a bit of a higgledy-piggledy game, to say the least. I know we've all got quite a bit to say on this and we've had quite a few comments come in the last 24 hours in regards to this. We'll start with the fourth minute when Matty English runs at Ben Murdoch-Masilla and Masilla's shoulder knocks English into next week. Play stopped for quite a while before Big Ben is shown the yellow card by Ben Thaler and he's off to the sin bin for 10 minutes. Come on, lads, let's have your thoughts on it. We'll start with you, Sam. Was it a red card? Was it a sin bin? Was it a play on?
To begin with, I couldn't make my mind up whether it was a sin bin or just play on. And then at half time, when they showed the front on pictures, he was lucky it wasn't red, very lucky it wasn't red. I feel he's going to get three matches for that. And so if he gets three matches, that said it should have been a red card.
Dennis, I mean, I slept through the game. I watched it on the catch up this morning, but I could see from a few of your WhatsApp messages that you didn't think it was a penalty at first.
Well, he actually puts his hand up to brace himself for impact and gets it wrong, and he runs into the shoulder. Now, if he would have gone another 6 inches and hit the peck of Ben Murdoch-Masilla, he would have been padded and probably wouldn't have been concussed. But unfortunately, it's slightly wrong. He stood there like a man mounting he is, and he cupped his head right at the temple, right on the shoulder point. And that's unfortunate. It's an accident. We don't want, you know, we don't want anybody to get injured. Look, there you go. Bang. There you go.
Can I just point out that Watt Bevan has moved on the podcasting forefront, and we are now showing replays to both Sam and Dennis live on the podcast. And as you can see, he did not say, where are we going with this, lad? It's unbelievable, isn't
listen,
it? It's unbelievable.
Listen, Dennis, the point is...
Yes, boss.
Simon Woolford said it perfectly well after the match. He spoke very articulately. He said...
He's saying I've not.
He said it was not intentional. He said there was no malice. It wasn't intentional by Ben Murdoch-Masilla. So I agree with you. It was an accident. But the rules as they are now, it is the obligation of Murdoch-Masilla not to smack him in the head. And he did. It wasn't intentional, but it's up to Murdoch-Masilla not to hit the opposition player in the head.
Where do we stand, Sam, in terms of them able to go to the video ref to look at that? Can Thaler call that and say, can you have a look at it? Tell me what's happened. Is that allowed?
Now, well, I thought it was for foul play. I thought it was, but I'm not 100% sure of my ground because these rules change. These subtleties in the rules change so often, don't they?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure exactly what we're on at the minute.
It's tricky, wasn't it? When I first saw it, I didn't think there was anything in it, you know. And that seemed to be what the Sky commentators thought as well. They changed their opinion on it within about 20 seconds after watching the replay.
Yeah.
It's difficult where Ben Murdoch-Masilla could have really gone. I mean, he's come at him at such a speed and so up front that what's Masilla supposed to do there? Sort of back off.
That's where I agree completely with Dennis. It wasn't deliberate. It was an accident, but he did smack him in the head.
Yeah, it was reckless. Masilla seems to have lost some weight, Dennis. Are you a keen follower of his sort of slimmer frame, or would you like to see the big barreled lad out there again?
I think He's obviously KFC have been shut for quite a while now. But I have to say, I think it's the right thing for him in this modern game. I think we've discussed it a couple of times now about it, speeding up and things. And if he's carrying a bit less weight and he's being a bit more mobile, then it's going to suit him, I think. Although at saying that, that extra padding might have helped in the incident we just talked about. But hey ho.
He didn't seem to do much yesterday, Sam. I mean, apart from that, he went off in the second half, seemed to be replaced by Jason Clark, but they never really got him running on that angle on the inside again, did they? I don't know if his mind was elsewhere after what had happened.
I mean, it could have been. He's subsequently tweeted quite a nice message to English, hoping he gets better. He might have been. Although it's a different player, we've talked before about Sitalecki openly saying if he hurts someone, it plays on his mind. And they are all, I say they are all, that's a stereotypical sweeping statement, isn't it?
Well, you said it, Sam, not us.
Yes.
But he definitely said that.
He did say that, didn't he, Dennis?
He is, him and Sitter, they are very religious players. They're still, they're praying after the games, things like that. And I do think...
You think they said a prayer for him?
Yeah, I probably do, because I think that's their makeup, and so maybe it was on his mind. Although we did see English sat in the stands within 10 or 15 minutes, so that probably put his mind at rest a little bit.
Okay. He probably wasn't speaking English at that point, though, was he?
No.
9th minute, Ratchford slots over a penalty, and it's 2-0 to the wire. Was anyone a little bit sort of... miffed while we took that penalty? We sort of had them on the back foot. Didn't you think it would have been better to run the ball, this new modern game? You're shaking your head, Sam. You were keen for the 2 points.
I thought we handled that first 10 minutes with just 12 players pretty well. And I thought that was part of it. For that first 5 minutes, we were in charge of the game for the first 5 minutes whilst Ben was off the pitch.
There was, in that first few minutes... and I nearly fell off my chair. There was a play of the ball that Ben Failer pulled up because he said he wasn't on his feet. Now, I had nothing wrong with that. I thought, great, he's done the right thing. Yes. The very following play, Toby King plays the ball exactly the same that he gets away with. And on the fifth tackle of that set as well, Ben Curry plays one on one knee, neither of which are pulled up. 13th minute, and it's all hail Caesar as he creates a one on one between Akumatai and Gareth Widdop. Widdop tries his best, but it's a try to Akumatai, with Caesar adding the extras to give the Giants a 6-2 lead. Caesar Cesar, great game again, Sam. Great game again.
You think?
I thought he bossed the game. I thought I would have much preferred him on the field on our side than Austin, put it that way.
Oh, well, yes. I'll give you that. Yeah, you know, we'll perhaps speak about Flaky Blake a little later. I thought he created that little... space and tie running at Widdop. I actually thought Widdop made a bloody good effort.
Yeah, he did.
Nearly took the ball, but there's no one going to... Sorry, not no one. A halfback isn't going to stop him 3 yards out when he's got a head of steam up, is he?
No, he's not.
Before we move on, something happened on the 16th minute, and I think it's about time we address this. Okay. In July 8th, 1990 in Rome, West Germany were playing Argentina. In the 65th minute, Jürgen Klinsmann was, you could say, chopped down by one of the Argentinians. And he rolled about like a madman, and the guy got sent off, red card. He moved in 1994 to Tottenham, and he did the same thing, diving, and got a penalty. Now, basically... I had a conversation last week with Mrs. Waywell, and she said to me, do you think with this modern game, people are going to start play acting because it's too fast and slowing down? And I should have mentioned it last week. I think this is a point in time where the game changes forever. Because on that day when Jürgen Klinsmann threw himself down, everybody else followed, and the game of football changed forever. And I think rugby is about to do the same. Austin, on the 16th minute, when Huddersfield clearly scored a try, feigned a head injury, and the play was stopped and it was disallowed. What a travesty. Rugby league is changed forever.
Are we going to have a 3-minute silence now?
About 3 seconds. Anyway, you're right, Dennis. You're right. That was embarrassing. Now, he didn't, to be fair, Thaler blew his whistle before the guy went over for the try because he saw what he thought was Austin with a head injury. But the replays showed it was just embarrassing, wasn't it? He left his head on the ground as if he'd been sparked out by Mike Tyson.
He does watch Liverpool, though, every week, doesn't he? He's obsessed with football.
That. Yes. Yeah.
That's where it comes from.
Well, in the 20th minute, he finds himself in the sin bin because he does his sort of David Beckham-style 1998 World Cup Diego Simeone back-heel trip.
Another football thing from him.
He should have, I mean, at one stage, tripping was an instant dismissal.
It was. When I was playing, it was a red card straight off.
No, Dennis, not drugs, not tripping. He had a shocker up until that point, and in fact didn't do anything really all game until right in the last seconds. He won't get banned for that though, Sam, will he? I think it'll just be a case.
I don't think so. Yeah.
That's it. Okay, 25th minute, following sustained wire pressure, a Widdop kick through finds Ben Curry to touchdown with Ratchford slotting over the two to make it Giants 6. Wire 8. Bit of a combination starting between Widdop and Curry now. It's 2 weeks on the trot. We've seen him sort of put him through the gap there, Sam.
I'm sat here feeling quite smug because right at the start of the season, when you two boys were saying Ben Curry's never made a break for however long, I said,
you know what, though?
He'll play, hang on, I said he'll play with Widdop, and as they start to form a partnership, they'll be very dangerous. And that's 2 weeks in a row.
I feel quite comfortable with Curry now, though, on his new salary and his new sort of, like, you know, expectation and position. I think actually he's probably a good player for the value that we've got now. I think Widdop working with him, I think that probably, like you say, it makes a difference.
38th minute, we go in all square with Caesar hitting a penalty. It's 8-all at half time. Were we confident going into the second half? Did we think it was just a case of holding the ball and we might start to win? I mean, where were you at with this, boys? I wasn't that confident.
No. Well, while you were asleep, I sent Dennis a message, something along the lines of, with them having virtually no players on the bench, we should win this by 12 points easily.
It was your new algorithm, wasn't it? You made a prediction at half time that we'd win by 12 points, Sam, and I said that sounds brilliant. That does. What happened?
Well, I said 12 points. My new best friend Simon Wolford have quite rightly said Warrington should have won that by 20.
Yeah.
So I was a bit nearer the mark than he was.
Okay, 43rd minute. Toby King finds himself in space down the left edge and cleverly sends a quarterback pass to Widdop. Both an incompetent Thaler and his touch judge completely let it go. And Widdop, off his left foot, steps inside. Beautiful try. Ratchford is successful again. And it's 14-8. We keep talking about Widdop being there every week. He's a little bit like Sean Edwards, the way he runs back on the inside and gets those balls. Terrific again, but the referee in there was absolutely shithouse, wasn't it? I mean, it couldn't.
Are you saying that Thaler was behind the play, Rob? Was he a bit slow?
Well, looking at it, no, Thaler's in front of the play. His touch judge is about half a metre behind it.
Yeah,
did you write to the head of referees this week, Sam, like you said you were going to?
Oh, yeah.
Where were you at with that? Oh, look at his body language, Dennis.
No,
look at his chair. Oh, dear.
What I'm going to have to do, I'm afraid, is simply tweet him because he doesn't accept direct messages. Nowhere can I find a place for inquiries on the rugby league.
Nowhere to post the dog shit to, Sam. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. The only thing you've got is to sign up to be a referee. So maybe I'll have to do that.
Oh, yes. Ooh, be on the inside. Yes. Good work, Sam. Good work. Getting on the inside.
Excellent.
Brilliant. Yeah. I think in the NRL, he stood down for a week after that performance. But I don't think I don't think they've got, you know, any case to answer in Super League. I think he'll just carry on. He's very forthright in his decisions, but he doesn't know how to fuck up at times. Some of the ones he comes out with. 54th minute. This time the Emperor Caesar embarrasses the King, floating the ball over to Jermaine McGilvery, who finds space in the corner. More than the Roman Empire ever conquered. Thankfully for Wire, Caesar misses the kick and it's Giants 12, Why a 14?
I made a note, and I can't remember which one it was now, but King actually ran out the line twice. Has he been taking tips off Gellin or anyone else, like, for jumping out the line? Because
maybe,
I thought we'd have eliminated that.
Might be part of the game plan that we must jump out the line at least four times in a match. And usually it's Gelling's job to do it, but this week it was King.
Did he have to jump out, though? Was there just nothing on that side at all? If he hadn't jumped out, he was over.
It wasn't just King, was it? It was both the winger and the centre were well in.
Make a note that it was King twice. Just made a note that it was King twice.
Definitely King.
We'll keep an eye on that.
Yeah. 58th minute, a nice flowing moving broken play from right to left makes its way to Toby King. King does well to get the ball away to a supporting Lynham, who's been involved in the move twice, and Lynham's in for his seventh try of the season. The kick would have put Wyre 8 points in front, but Ratchford misses, leaving Wyre leading by 6 points. 18-12 up we are. He seems to miss more from sort of just slightly in from the touchline than he does actually from the touchline. It's a couple he's missed now like that.
Yeah, it was one that needed kicking, wasn't it? And we've spoke before, over the last 2 years, his kicking has been significantly better than it, or seems to be significantly better than it was. That was a kick that you would hope your kicker's making, I don't know, 19 times out of 20.
That was the first time, I think, in the entire game where Blake Austin did something right, the 58th minute, because he did start that play, didn't he? He got up off his backside quickly and got it away.
You're right. He didn't do anything special, but for the first time in the match, he didn't decide to stay on the floor. Having picked up the ball, he actually got up rather than playing on the floor and pretending he was... playing association football.
Are we going to discuss the players at the end of this?
We will do. Dennis, calm down, mate. I know you've had a coffee, but you'll be all right. Put your glasses back on. You'll be fine. 74th minute, Giants on the fifth tackle close to Wyre's line. Throw the ball around like a hot potato following Wyre's poor attempt to tackle and kill the ball and receive a handover. The footy is smuggled out to Oliver Russell for him to score. He calmly converts his own try and it's 18-all. They just didn't tackle right close on the line there, did they? It was an awful attempt. No.
Widdop fell over. I don't know whether he's wrong-footed. And Mike Cooper flapped at the Huddersfield player at Cudjoe. It suddenly looked a bit dodgy from being very comfortable a few minutes before. It suddenly looked a bit dodgy then, didn't it?
Well, at 18-all it did. And then on the 77th minute, and perhaps for the first time in the match, Austin shows his marquee quality, nailing a drop goal from a good distance out to make it 19-18. Good drop goal, Dennis. You've got to give him that. Hit it well.
I think this is the point. I think everything will be forgotten about before that. I agree. You can't knock the drop goal. Seems to be that we couldn't kick for a toffee a drop goal last year, and then the first attempt, it's straight over from a decent distance. So yeah, it was great, but I think it hid a multitude of sins from a performance by Austin.
79th minute, Giants Oliver Russell has a chance to send the game into golden point, but his composure to attempt to drop the goal, he knocks the ball on. And the final score is the Giants 18, Wyre 19. We are very, very flat towards the line. I don't think we've got many runners. When we get close to the line, at times we're throwing the ball around a bit like we're playing touch footy. There's no direction. There's no, you know, we've got that one move across field for Ben Murdoch Masilla. He wasn't on the park. For long periods, Sam, we look very, very flat close to their line.
We did. I've got a little bit more on this coming up later in the podcast, but I agree with you. I started writing down positives and negatives. I feel positive from yesterday was Widdop and King, and to use a Steve Price phrase, resilience. We're seeing those as positive. Austin's drop goal was a positive, but negatives, I thought, to begin
with... We've got time for this.
Well, yeah. Austin faking his head shot and his trips. I thought we were playing a team that was depleted but couldn't put them away. Well, Austin, let's go with Austin.
For a second then, Dennis, I thought he died. He just stopped breathing.
Yeah, well, I thought, shit, we're going to have to replace him.
I was going to go with a few more too, but I think Austin...
You fell asleep reading your own words.
I texted Dennis and said he's a show pony. Now there is no doubt that on occasions he does some brilliant stuff. There is no doubt on occasions he does some brilliant stuff. However, for the rest of the time, he goes missing, he gives penalties, he throws himself on the floor. Oh. And I think somehow we're lacking a killer instinct, and perhaps that's the reason why he's playing for Warrington and couldn't quite get into that Canberra team.
You broke up a bit there, Sam. Blake Austin's not outside your window, is he? He's sort of putting his foot on the coaxial cable.
He did lower his voice a little, didn't he? Yeah.
I'll be fair to him. I'll be fair to him. In his post-match interview, he did, in correct words, basically say he played shite.
So did he?
So let's be fair. He did say that in the correct parlor. So
what Sam's trying to say is Blake Austin was a pile of shit. He basically couldn't kick the ball. When he did kick it, it went 30 metres high up in the air with no communication to the rest of the team, and therefore put us back under pressure in our own half when Huddersfield had another set of six. You can't forgive the feigning of a head injury, which is he's basically got this attitude of a footballer now. And like Sam has described, swanning around the pitch, can't make a tackle for a toffee. I didn't really see him make a tackle. He was all over the show giving away penalty for offside, and he was going around here, there and everywhere. It was absolutely pathetic. And, you know, we've got a really good team, and you know, including Austin, from his reputation. But he is not performing. Even the dog agrees with me.
That's my dog. Has my dog ever barked in 72 episodes of this podcast, apart from when you mentioned Austin? Unbelievable. Yeah, we had a message from Anton Johnson. He says, Austin's kicking game is so one-dimensional. He doesn't seem to put much effort into those kicks he puts up in the air. Just lethargically puts them up, doesn't he? It's all a bit...
Do you know, I'm not sure it's a question of effort. I think it's more attitude. And by that, I don't necessarily mean bad attitude. I just mean when he's on his game, it's like when he's good, he's very, very good. And when he's bad, he's awful. And it doesn't seem like he doesn't have a fallback position where he just puts in a decent, solid performance. He's all or nothing, isn't he?
You know, Dennis, when you visit an old person and they start telling you the same story twice, is that what Sam's doing? He just told us that so. 3 minutes ago, didn't he?
I know. I'll bring it round now. Unsung heroes, again, from last week, Cooper this week. And I meant just before the Widdop Curry try, I think he carted the ball up about three or four times and held up some of the Huddersfield defence, which really tired him out and created that gap for Widdop and Curry. So he was my man of the match.
You're almost getting to the stage where you're going to put a Cooper picture up behind you, Dennis. I'm getting this. He's got a bit of a love interest going on with Cooper recently. Marmo, what do we think of Marmo? He played okay. I thought he was, he was tenacious. He got stuck in. I thought he played very well.
I think it highlights why Steve Price prefers Gelling at centre, because Marmo, our new player, brings pace and excitement, but he brings also dropping off occasional tackles and not pushing the man back in defence. And I think he goes for Price goes for the strength.
And someone will give three over passes away again.
Yeah, he goes for the strength rather than someone who could, if he was put through half a gap, go the length of the field, which Mamo certainly could. Okay. So pluses and minuses.
Solid. I thought he was a solid tackle. I didn't really have any thought about they're going to get round him or break through here. I think he was solid as you come. I think he's a good pick.
Akawala didn't have the best of games. He gave a penalty away. He dropped a ball. Does this mean we will see Leilani Latu? Where is Leilani Latu? Hey, our overseas signing that has never played a game for us. Where is he?
Yeah, I think he might be one of those players who does a full season without actually being on the pitch unless we get some injuries.
You need to bring Area 51 back, don't you?
I tell you one thing that is a mystery, and that's Steve Price's white shirts. They're beautifully white. I'm not sure what soap powder he's using, but gee, they're crisp.
Yeah, very crisp.
Time also now to look at the Sky Sports commentators with classic quotes of the week, Dennis.
Indeed, yes. We weren't going to do this. We were going to get a bit prepared for this, but already people have been requesting this as part of the podcast. So I think we've put a few things together with the input of some of the fans. Straight away, Lee, I think it's Lee in Dubai, he was straight onto us. He pointed out, 10 minutes talking about a red card for Ben Murdoch-Masilla before a yellow card is issued. So yeah, the commentators spent about 10 minutes during that time while he was being tended to, the injured player, saying like, what are we going to do without when he's been sent off with a red card? So completely getting that wrong. On 59 minutes, I think it was Terry O'Connor, he said, well, they've only got 10 or 11 minutes to go. I don't know how they're going to manage. And where in fact, there was obviously 20 minutes to go. So that was shit. Terry O'Connor said that Ben Murdoch-Masilla, when he's looking back at it, he said, soon as he hit the guy, that might be over, he thought. He was paraphrasing what I think Ben Murdoch-Masilla was thinking. But if you actually watch it, Ben Murdoch-Masilla immediately picked the ball up and ran into the other direction. So that was a load of bollocks as well. Mm. The other thing as well is that I think they're all negative on Sky. This was a McDermott. I can't remember the guy's name. He went over on his ankle and got injured. And he said, oh, well, there was no malice in that. Well, I don't know why there would be malice in that if he's just turned his ankle. So that was a bit stupid. And then the best one, probably till last, is on the 51st minute, a Huddersfield player injured himself by headbutting his own player. And the commentator said, perhaps he should be given a red card by his own player. And that was the analysis that they came up with. I won't go on to Phil Clark, other than the fact we did have a tweet from Mark Blowden.
Yes, academic.
Yeah.
No, you take it, Dennis, but I just want to make it clear that he's a professor of psychology and behavioural sciences and specialist in body language interrogation techniques.
Okay. And what he did is he showed a picture of Phil Clark at halftime discussing the red card. He wrote, Phil Clark calling for a red card. Notice the downward steeple of the hands. This is a clear body language tell that he is not confident in what he's just said. I think Sky Sports should review their pundits who provide disinformation. Well, I totally agree.
Thanks, Mark. Think you can keep them coming in, Mark. Keep those comments coming in. Noble Arthur, commentating on Sky for Warrington this week, but Ben Pro, we mixed him in there with another dance anthem in the highlights that we played. Dennis, could you see Ben Pro taking his top off, lubing up, dropping some acid and going off his fatty little tits to Paul Van Dijk?
Well, it's as you know on the podcast, and I've said this before, when it comes to music and things, Rob has a bit of a difficulty here. And I did note that he said, was it Paul Van Dijk spelt with an E?
Careful.
Where in fact, Paul Van Dijk, the music dance sort of DJ that I think he was referring to. So I had a look at Paul Van Dijk with an E for you. And basically, I could find was really some Dutch folk music that I think he would be sort of...
Sam, can you make a note? Can you take a note to take that ghetto blaster off him? That's twice he's played music down his microphone.
So, during this episode. I've lost my notes, but if he was to go into Leeds, because did he not study at Leeds at one point?
Well, we have with it being A-level week this week and the results coming out, we've managed to obtain Ben Pro's A-level results. I'll quickly just read the results off for you. He went to Catholic High School in Chester between 87 and 1992. He got 11 GCSEs, Sam, did very well. He got an A in English Literature, an A in English Language, A in Mathematics, Information and Technology, another A, nailed it there. He then got a Coordinated Science Dual Certificate double A, a French A, a Spanish A, a Geography A, Religious Studies A, and just dropped off there with a B in music.
Probably listening to Paul Van Dijk.
That's true. But then for his A levels, he moved over to St John Deane's Sixth Form College at Northwich, where he did five A levels, getting an A in English Literature, an A in French, a B in mathematics, a B in general studies, and then randomly from nowhere, because he didn't seem to do any of this in his GCSEs, he hits a D in chemistry.
I wonder what went on there. That must have been all the easy checking.
Yeah, he was obviously not interested in chemistry, wasn't he?
Do we think Ben Pro's a better commentator than Bill Arthur?
Interestingly enough, I've just played that Dutch folk music.
Now, in the days that we were in Leeds, and I know he went on to Leeds, I don't know if you've already mentioned that, the warehouse and the gallery were popular, but now there's one called Double Dutch. So if you want to get down to Leeds, you may see him down there with his top off in Double Dutch.
With his finger in a dyke.
Oh, dear.
A supporter who appears not to be morbidly obese screens on Sky Homecam. For the first time since 1993, a Super League player plays the ball correctly. And Benny Westwood files for bankruptcy, following Steve Broomhead receiving an all-you-can-eat voucher.
Yes, we've got the news at Bevan back there with the headlines, but let's move on to the stories. Super League has been thrown into chaos with 9 Hull FC players testing positive for COVID-19. 3 members of the coaching team have also come up with positive results. The Hull players that have tested positive have been forced to quarantine. All tests undertaken by Salford players have come back negative, but 11 Red Devil players have been told to self-isolate by the club. The RFL analysis of Sunday's match showed those 11 players came into prolonged face-to-face contact with the infected Hull players and are therefore at an increased risk of contracting the virus. First of all, there's 2 Salford players there that are obviously not pulling their weight in defence with only 11. We went on about this last week enough, didn't we? But you only have to look over Instagram to see. And we're going to move on to that a little bit later. But they're not in any kind of COVID bubbles, these players, like the NRL, are they? And it's just mathematically, we said before, I think 1 in 1,500 people have had it in the UK or are infected at any one given time. When you've got that many players in each squad, mathematically says every week you're going to have someone with an infection.
Our game is quite in the position, like with the NRL, where there's so much money involved to dictate to the players.
Do you say you dictate? Do you say dick?
Yeah. Dictate. Dictate.
Didn't he play for Widnes at fullback? Dictate. Oh, that was Alan Tate.
That was it. Dick was his brother.
What, Tate?
We're not in the position to tell the players that they must do this and must do that, but we need them to be taking, or we need the clubs and perhaps Mr. Invisible himself, Robert Elston, to take a lead here and actually send down some very clear instructions. Price and Wolford before the match both spoke about it. We might actually be lucky. This happening to Hull might just be the shock to make everybody else pull the socks up about
No, it won't, Sam. Nothing's changed. Oh, what's changed since this? They're all still out on the piss. What's changed?
Probably right. I spoke to a friend of mine who lives just on the outskirts of Manchester. He lives at Timperley, near Altrincham. And I asked him, these 2 weeks when you've meant to be locked down a bit further, have you noticed a difference? He said, no. He said he's not. All the bars still seem to be more or less full. People sat outside on the pavement, still drinking. Mostly younger people. And that's reflecting what we're seeing on Instagram and
everywhere else.
Unfortunately,
that's the best bit about that you've said, is Elston being the person responsible for this. And I think that's good that you've said that, is that, you know, I think I said something to someone on Twitter, and I said, like, you know, Ralph Rimmer's pretty good. He was a bit confused, came back and said, I've never really listened to Rimmer's lot. So that's a bit of an unfortunate thing. I don't think he'd listen to the podcast, but it is Elston's responsibility. But I did say weeks and weeks ago, I don't think you can do anything to stop it happening. The most important thing is what we're going to do when it does happen, and how are we going to structure it for the rest of the year, because it's going to happen. So you've just got to make sure you've got those plans in place.
How many more teams do you need now for it to go absolutely tits up? You only need one more team. If we've got 2 teams in lockdown, bang a third into lockdown, we really are struggling, aren't we?
Rugby Union started yesterday. Have you seen what their rules are? If you cannot fulfil a fixture, you automatically get a 20-0 loss.
Gee, good, I mean, that's Russian roulette, isn't it? That's, you know, you can't always say it's the fault of the players.
It puts the emphasis on the club to take it very, very seriously, doesn't it?
So then what you need then is 13 introvert players that like to read, stay at home. Hey, that's who you need to look for. You made an interesting point as well, Sam, that it was Timperley where your friend lives. And clearly, Frank Sidebottom, he'd be fine, wouldn't he, with his big papier-mâché mask on? He'd be all right. He'd be fine.
Maybe that's the way, yeah. If you've made his mask a bit bigger, you could even get 2 metres distance between each person.
Now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to introduce a head mask for all rugby players. That's what I think should happen. Maybe we should just do that for the rest of the season. Then we don't have to worry about it at all.
Oh, dear. Where is this podcast going? The weekend Super League games between Salford and Catalans and Hull and Castleford were both postponed. Catalans ended up playing Wakefield and Castleford play Saints today. This podcast is being recorded prior to that game. And also there's another game as well, isn't there, today, which I think is taking place between
Leeds and Wigan.
Hull and Castleford are also set to meet in the sixth round of the Challenge Cup. This game also has been postponed to a later date. Moving on, Anthony Gelling faced the Super League disciplinary panel and was charged with a grade C dangerous lift, which resulted in Gelling receiving a 2-match ban. I think we're fine, aren't we, with Mamo, Sam? We can carry on with Mamo the way we saw yesterday?
Well, particularly as we've got Wakefield up next, who look in all sorts of trouble at the minute.
That's right.
At the minute. So, yeah, I have no problem with Jake Mamo.
Five former Wire players have found new clubs. Gareth O'Brien signing for Castleford from Toronto on a loan deal until the end of the season. Bodine Thompson has left the Toronto Wolfpack to sign for Leeds Rhinos until the end of the season also. Sam Wilde, once talked about as possibly a future Warrington captain, has signed for the Ottawa Aces and will be joined by ex-Wolves prop Pat Moran. And not forgetting young Matty Smith. Has re-signed for Widnes, with Widnes fans over the moon with the news. If you had one of those five back, Sam, are you picking any? Would you want any of those back at the club? I know we've spoken about Pat Moran, but I'd go for Gareth O'Brien. Sam, he's the one I'd want back.
Yeah, Gareth O'Brien has been the one who has consistently performed, not at top level, but if you had him in your squad, you'd say, yeah, I'm glad he's there as cover. When they were younger, I agree with what you wrote there, Sam Wilde looked like he was going to be the business, but didn't quite go that bit further.
Okay, with him spending 20 weeks on the statistical sidelines, he warmed us up last week by stretching the truth behind the Christopher Hill penalty count. Yes, he's known as the podcast's mathematical saint, and like St. Christopher, the patron saint of travellers, back to leaders on his factual, magical, statistical tour, it's time for...
Statistics, caveats, bollocks. Listen up, you norms, it's time for Sam to talk shite. For 5 minutes. It's Sam Sankey's shitistics. No. Dick's data. No. Anal cyst. No. Twat stats. No. Statistics. Yes. That's it. It's time for Sam Sankey's statistics.
Oh, it doesn't get any better.
Do you like your new jingle, Sam, that we slipped in last week?
No comment.
Do you? What have you got for us, Sam?
Steve Price. I'm going to start a little bit. Yeah, I'm going to start
a little bit. Is this about his white shirt?
It's not about his white shirt. It's not about whether he uses Persil, Ariel, or Bold.
Oh, well rolled off the tongue. That's,
I know, you did, yeah. It's a bit, no hesitation.
It's about Warrington's attack and whether we're ever going to be good enough to win a grand final. Mm-hmm. So Steve Price has been with us for 2.5 seasons now, although this has been a truncated season. And he was with St. George Illawarra for 2.5 seasons as well. So I'm just going to give you just a few stats about points scored by Warrington and St. George while Steve Price has been in charge.
Oh.
Okay. 2018, he came here. We scored 767 points in 30 regular games, 26 points per game. 2019, we scored 24 points per game. 2020 so far, we've scored 18 points per game. St. George Illawarra, 2012, they were worst in the league for scoring points. They did finish ninth, but they were only scoring 17 points per game. In 2013, they were 15th worst out of 16, scoring just 16 points per game. And when he got sacked in 2014, they were only scoring 17 points per game. In all of those years, the defensive records were better than their attacking records. And when you look at Steve Price and you think of words to describe him, you think of words like hardworking, resilient. You don't think of charismatic, excitement. Sydney Morning Herald in 2018, when we first got to our grand final, did a piece on him. Generally a shy man, uncomfortable with the limelight. Oh. He was criticised as not being made of the right stuff to be a head coach, despite being regarded by many players as one of the best brains in the business. Now, I think that perhaps sums Steve Price up. He's obviously got ability, but is he the man to inspire a team to expansive football that's going to win trophies? Now, in the last 12 months, since we beat London on the 6th of July, 36-6, we've only scored 15.4 points per game. For a team that's got players like Josh Charnley, Stephen Ratchford, Blake Austin, Tom Lynham, Darrell Clark, Ben Murdoch-Masilla, that's simply not good enough. And I think we are on that cusp of whether we're going to be good enough to get in that top four, because we don't score enough points. Ironically, if we do finish in that top four, I think all these ideas of being resilient and strong and tough, I think ironically gives us a good chance of actually winning it if we get to the semi-finals, because we've seen with St Helens in the Super League semi-final and the Challenge Cup final, when he's the underdog, when his team's got his back against the wall, he can inspire a performance out of a team. I just don't think he's good at being a front runner. So that's this week. Are we ever going to play exciting rugby under Steve Price? And I think the answer is probably no.
So if you were to basically sum that analogy up as a washing powder brand, which one are you going for?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Ariel, Surf, Daz, Persil, Fairy.
No, home brand. Is there a home brand there?
Probably yeah. Lidl's own brand is WH5.
Oh, that's
five
harsh,
or something like that.
That's
really shit. That's the middle list.
Nice.
I've got a graph. Oh, you can't see it. I've got a graph there. That's shit, Sam. So what you're doing is saying is shit.
Do you think with all these amazing stats that Sam keeps coming out with, he should possibly pop over to the Rugby League Museum, do an audit, cast his eye over Rimmer's logbook?
Mm-hmm.
And time now to head over to the home of the National Rugby League Museum and the set of Rimmer's Lot. Our apologies, this programme is running slightly later than published in the Radio Times, but this was due to the dramatic finish in the snooker. Quite honestly, why he didn't elect to play the safety shot and roll the cue ball onto the balk cushion, rather than trying to pot that tricky blue without the use of the half butt, is anyone's guess. My husband and I love the game, and he's been dusting off his rotten old Q-tip and sinking my pink for years. Not once has he cannoned off and gone up my brown.
I don't like it, Stevie. Gary Hetherington will be arriving in a minute to give us a shakedown for the 16 million. It's like that mafia movie, The Goodies, with Bobby De Janeiro.
Gee, Rolfie, do you mean Robert De Niro in Goodfellas?
Yes, that's the one. He's got a face like an angry pizza with a stuffed crust. Oh, that reminds me. Have you made his wise guy sandwich? I think we may have run out of Henderson's relish.
No worries, Rolfie. I'm sweet. It's all under control. I've got it. Wensleydale cheese wrapped in a Yorkshire pudding or with plenty of Henderson relish. Do you want me to spit on it too?
Oh, no time for garnishes, Stevie. Good afternoon, Mr. Hetherington. How may I be of assistance?
All right, Grimmer. Now, listen here. What the fuck are you playing at? Where's my cloned-off parking space, you daft bastard? I had to park on Lidl. I had to leave Warren Bailey off his lead on the back seat so my roller doesn't get nicked.
Oh, I do apologise about that, but I'm afraid we needed the cone for our 6-again megaphone loudspeaker. You know, for the museum's new technical advancements through the 21st century showpiece.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Wimmer. You've got no fucking respect. I shall put you in a pair of concrete rubber wellies and drop you off that sodding Huddersfield narrow canal. Mind you, you'd probably float, wouldn't they? Being full of hot air and attached to that fucking daft rubber wing.
Oh, that's no way to talk about Stevie. Wait till you see how useful he is. Come on, Stevie. Take Mr. Hetherington's temperature with the advanced RFL digital thermometer.
Here you go, big fella.
What are they doing? That's a fucking air dryer, you daft bastard. Did they think I need a fucking blow dryer?
Oh, tackle sacks. What are you doing, Stevie?
Oh, struth, Ralphie. Sorry about that. I was blind shotting.
Oh, never mind that. Have they got me money, you pair of fuckwits? Do they think my Edenly executive mirrored walled room downstairs boardroom bathroom, including marble bathtub with gold-plated wino sonnuses above a carved travertine sink created in an antique French bird bath, will build its fucking self?
Well, there's been a slight hiccup on that front, Mr. Hetherington. Until we play the next round of the Cup, we won't be seeing any income.
The fucking what?
Well, is there anything else we can accommodate you with? A little empathy, perhaps?
Are they trying to be funny with me? Lise doesn't need yet another sodding joker. I've already got that jester to Kiega. Now, where's that under-counter artificial intelligence droid that I've heard all about? Apparently it's flying off the shelves in the NRL like criticism flies off that bloody Lord Sinfield.
Yes, the non-stick. Stevie, darling. Would you be so kind and bring Mr. Hetherington the Elston X TCP-164 centimetre sex doll with silicon head? They're just over there next to the Bill Arthur's Hitman and Her posters that we can't shift.
Oh, no worries, big fella. She's an absolute beauty, mate. Just tug her pull string and she'll snap into action quicker than an Aussie customs officer removing a refugee.
Jesus, she's this spitting image of Dickie. Oh, Dickie will have hours of fun with this, coaching bollocks to thee. Tony and his eyes Smith can go and find himself another squash partner.
Ooh, Stevie, perhaps you could play squash with Tony.
Oh, there's buckless chance of that, Rolfie. I'm more a tennis bloke. Growing up as a kid in Woolloomooloo, I had a picture on my wall of Yvonne Goolagong with a tennis ball stuffed down her knickers.
Oh, did she not have any pockets?
Oh, trust me, Ralph. Those knickers were full of versatility.
Right, Wimmer, listen here. I'm fucking off. Don't forget I'll be back in a few weeks once I've got Dickie focused on inserting his technical end into the doll.
Oh, and don't forget your sandwich, Mr. Hetherington.
Oh, thanks a lot. It looks a bit greasy. Is it wrapped in Lord Sinfield non-stick baking parchment?
Oh, yeah, mate, that'll be the extra relish.
Mark my words, Wimmer, I'll be fucking back. I'll be fucking back here before you know it.
Oh, phew. Where did you get that extra Henderson's relish from, Stevie?
Oh, it's dead set no problem. I just got my mate Hendo to give me a sample of his gentleman's relish. We were sweet.
Oh, good on you, Stevie. I guess technically it's still Henderson's relish.
Time now for Sam to critique this week's Rimmer's Lot.
I think two things I'll say about that. Firstly, there was an interesting mix of accents.
Yes.
And secondly, I don't think I've ever heard the F word used that much since listening to NWA's album when I was about 20.
Who?
Yeah, well, not Rob won't know who that is.
We'll give it an 18 certificate then in future.
And the fact that I did a bit of method acting this week and stayed in character of Hetherington for 4 or 5 days leading into the recording, Sam, do you think that sort of added to the drama of the event?
I think you'll be divorced again quite soon if you did.
Okay, let's move on to the Twitter vote. Do you believe Super League will complete the 2020 season? Well, yes, 33%. No, 67%. Just over two-thirds, Dennis, saying it's not going to happen. I mean, everyone was a bit pessimistic when we put that vote out towards the start of the week.
I did say right at the start of the season, back in February, that we possibly wouldn't have a season this year. And I was surprised, pleasantly surprised, that we've managed to put something together. Mm. But I think after the whole event, it does demonstrate that it's very fragile, isn't it?
It is. It is. 67%. Interesting, though, that 67% is also the 19th prime number.
Interesting.
It's also a province and traffic code in Zolgudak, Turkey. And let's not forget, it's the same number of laps as the German Grand Prix since 2002.
So. That was a waste of your time. Is that because no one was talking to you? Because you were a method acting Gary Hetherington?
I've got a block to you. I've got a block to you. Not happening.
Social distance.
You are now listening to the Rugby League Emergency Broadcast System.
Welcome back to the Warrington Wolves Social Distancing News, reporting every week on what the players of the Warrington Wolves have been getting up to. Our supercomputer, Lottie, will analyse the web and social media activities each week and randomly select a player and isolation activity for the podcast to analyse. So, without further ado, Lottie, let's plot those dots from those wire clots. And the results are in. It's Jake Mamo. He's nobody's fool.
Okay, the section tried to embrace versatility with us taking a look at the fringe player's Instagram. Only for last time out, the section to be cut short by Barbie's friend, Midge. Dennis, forget the fringe. What have you combed through, partied, and been able to scout this week?
Well, Jake Mamo is nobody's fool, a cultured, sensible person riding a bike with his feet in the clips. Thank the Lord. So, need to say more. He's no fool. And you know what? Generally, he's a guy of consistency. And I think we've already discussed him, how he played in the match. He's proven that way as well. So, Jake Mamo this week, I would say, is a good guy.
No fool. No fool. No fool at all.
No fool.
When it comes to rugby league players, though, Instagram, there are a few fools out there, aren't there? Idiots, I think, is probably a word you could use. Other words for idiots, of course, are fool, like you just said, Dennis, dickhead, pleb, knobhead, bellend,
show pony,
nincompoop, numpty, jackass, and Sam's new favourite, which he christened a player on WhatsApp this week, wankface.
He
got very annoyed after a little bit of Instagram, and he was now Christmas to someone.
I'm getting very, very annoyed with one player continually breaking the rules.
I remember.
But the question is, and I know you want to know this, what makes an idiot?
Didn't the Sydney Cricket Ground crowd once famously shout to Phil Tufnell, "Lend us your brains, we're building an idiot over here"?
Do you? Well, what we need to do, lads, is look at IQ ratings. So I've looked at what makes an idiot and also how our podcast listeners compare in comparison to that chart. Does anyone know what the average IQ is in the UK? What do you think the average
86.
IQ is? Not
no,
far,
more,
Dennis.
Not more.
95. 95 is the average IQ. To become part of Mensa, you need to get in that 98th percentile and have an IQ of 132. But a superior IQ, the threshold hypothesis, which assumes that above average intelligence represents a necessary condition of high level creativity. And I think we've clearly pointed out that we are in the superior IQ section with my brilliant Area 51, kinetic energy, population versus attendance analytics, and the Reynolds transport theorem. All these sections have given us added superior listener that we've tried to bring on board. Let's not forget Dennis's tireless work in tackle bags. And along with him bringing us the brilliant, stimulating, thought-provoking ideas, he's also asked deep-provoking questions too, to the likes of John Clark. John, how many Weetabix can you eat in 4 minutes? So, kept it going. Although Sam has brought the caveat into play, bringing the IQ listener down with his Sam's factual statistical simplicities. So, sort of where we stand. Anyway, I'm digressing. What makes an idiot, dickhead, pleb, knobhead, bellend, nincompoop, numpty jackass, or Sam's new favourite, wank face? Well, to be classed as an idiot, dickhead, pleb, bellend, nincompoop, numpy, jackass, etc., etc., wank face, you need an
Sam's
IQ.
Gone now.
You need an IQ of below 68 to be an idiot.
Higher than I thought.
There you go. Does this mean that Super League referees that are incompetent by not going to the big screen are idiots? Or is this IQ threshold hypothesis too hard to debate? And should it be left to the computer such as the Hadron Collider following its brilliant work on the Higgs boson?
Hang on. I can see where this is going. This is why you told me to drop tackle bags, isn't it? This is your own tackle bags coming here.
Oh, dear. But do you also know that the Tokyo University of Technology proved that a house brick has an average IQ of -5. So only 7 points lower than a witness fan. So it's good. Good to know. But, and this is the question we're all asking, do all inanimate objects have an IQ?
It's never a question.
Are you asking that? Are you asking?
No, I don't think we are all asking that.
Does a Warrington Wolves cardboard cutout have a higher IQ than a Wigan cardboard cutout? And if so, should all wire cutouts be made of 2-ply rather than Pieter's cutouts be made of 3-ply to represent they're a bit thick? Anyway, you won't believe this. It turns out there is a well-loved inanimate object believed to have an IQ of 123. Can anyone guess what it is?
The Eiffel Tower.
A statue of someone.
Barbie was designed in 1959 by Jack Ryan, who began his career as an engineer making missiles for the Pentagon. Jack Ryan was eventually hired by Mattel, with Ryan saying, "If I'm going to make a doll, she will come with a high intellect, unlike the action man who tends to be played with by the daft kids." So, Dennis, did you have an action man when you were growing up? Yeah. Thought you did. Yeah. Okay, so where do our listeners fit in, I hear you ask?
Where do our listeners fit in, Rob?
Thank you.
Somewhere between an action man and Barbie.
Well, we implemented our podcasting metaphorical elimination intellect sieve process, which retains the superior IQ listener and filters the idiots, chavs, etc., down to the cat shit tray, or put it another way, the Warrington RL forum.
Oh, yes.
This, what Bevan
I like the way you're going to make friends with everybody here. Just abuse everybody there is, and then nobody can feel aggrieved.
You might not think this. The what Bevan
Can Sam relax a little bit now, knowing that you're going down this track because you've been skirting around for a little while.
We're homing in. The what Bevan filter process has helped the podcast achieve a goal of the IQ superior listener. I've also renamed the intellect elimination listener sieve to, Sam, have you got your pencil handy?
Yeah.
Catchment universal mathematical hyphen generated arithmetic Reynolds geometrics listener enticer. I'll let you work
that out. Said that too quick for me.
Well, having contacted Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Cast, etc. for a breakdown of our listener analytical intellectual algorithmic IQ statistics, I'm proud to say I can announce that the What Bevan IQ listenership has an average score of 59.
Christ.
I've read that wrong. Oh, that's Steve Broomhead's waistline. Sorry. 123. Oh.
So So now that we're underway again, which of the runners and riders are looking hot and who's looking not? Well, let's start with Castleford, top of the league table alphabetically. However, after their crushing defeat to Catalan Dragons, they are no longer top of the Super League table. I've been impressed with Castleford in a few games. I thought they were particularly good when they beat St Helens. However, against Catalan, they got absolutely destroyed. A couple of injuries have really taken their toll, so perhaps squad depth is something that might cost them a shot at the title this year. Moving on then to Catalan Dragons. A real Jekyll and Hyde team, you never really know what you're going to get with Catalan, but they have put in some really impressive performances, most notably that victory recently over Castleford. It's difficult to predict with Catalan, but I think if they could get a bit of consistency, then they'd have a real shot at making the playoffs. Huddersfield have been greatly improved by the acquisition of Aidan Caesar, or Cesar, depending on who you ask, and they look a bit more cohesive as an outfit, have ground out some good wins. They beat St Helens away from home. The big disappointment of this season has been Hull FC, who I actually tipped to finish in the top three, and currently they're nowhere near. They started the season well with a couple of wins against Leeds and Hull KR, but since then they've well and truly fallen off the wagon and had some really embarrassing losses. We beat them really comfortably, and they got absolutely annihilated by Salford most recently. A lot of their players look to have given up, so something needs to change there for them to have any playoff ambitions. Their city rivals, Hull KR, Tony Smith has them playing some nice stuff, but they're very leaky at the back. And it's hard to see KR finishing anywhere other than bottom for me. They're just lacking that little bit of quality, little bit of Super League experience, perhaps. Leeds Rhinos, another bit of a Jekyll and Hyde team. We've seen some great performances from Leeds. They nilled Warrington, unfortunately. They came back from that loss against Huddersfield and ended up turning that into a win. But then they got nilled by St Helens, which was effectively a home game at Headingley. So again, Leeds, tricky one to work out. Then we move on to St Helens, last year's champions, who'd actually started the season not too well. They've been beaten by Warrington, Castleford and Huddersfield. But since the restart, they've pulled out two really good performances, a comfortable win against Catalan and then nilling Leeds Rhinos on their own patch. And they look the real deal again now after the first two games back. The likes of Alex Walmsley, Lachlan Coote, Tommy Makinson, Johnny Lomax, all playing really, really well. And it's hard to see Saints finishing anywhere other than in the top three again now. Salford had a bit of a tricky start after their wonderful year last year, but they picked up some home wins recently. They beat Wigan with a dramatic comeback late on, and they beat Hull FC with a crushing performance. They got 54 points, played some really nice stuff. I enjoy watching Salford. I don't think they're quite as good as they were last year, so I don't think they'll make the playoffs, but I don't think they're in any danger of finishing bottom either, because there's too much quality in that side, and Ian Watson is a fantastic coach. Wakefield got some good wins under the belt. They beat Warrington as well in the third game, but then again, you never really know what you're going to get from them. They're lacking that little bit of quality. They've got the likes of David Fifita, Tom Johnston, Bill Tupu. These are all good players, but just a little bit more, and I think they'd be a good side, Wakefield. They're a little bit unlucky not to get something against Wigan. Then on to ourselves. We've actually won three games in a row now. Castleford, Hull FC and Hull KR. I think after a bit of a tricky start, we've actually really improved. There's only a couple of games that I'm not too happy with, which have been Leeds, where we were beaten very comfortably, and Wakefield away, where we didn't play particularly well. But in every other game, I think we've turned in a decent, if not good, performance. So I think we can be reasonably happy with our start to the season. And then Wigan, who currently find themselves top, without really playing that well at any point, I don't think. I'm not sure whether they can continue that for the rest of the season, though. I mean, they were quite fortunate to beat ourselves, I think, and they've not played St Helens yet. But so far, I wouldn't say that any team has been particularly impressive. There's a lot of inconsistency, and I think in the next two or three games is when we'll see teams developing that consistency and the possibility of finishing top of Super League this year.
Dennis, has Steve Price deployed the Depeche Mode style of versatility, and are Wire now guaranteed a top four finish?
Well, I think we've been described as... if you listen to, the Sky Sports pundits, which I suggest you don't, but there is a point that you could probably pull out there, is the fact that we're playing a very conservative game under Steve Price. And one thing I'd like you to think about is, if we had a different coach with that excellent set of players that we have, i.e. Tony Smith or Ian Watson, do you think it would be playing a more expansive and still being successful?
I think the bit there of what you've said is, and still being successful. There is no doubt in my mind, that in watching rugby, some of the best rugby I've ever seen play was those first 5 years under Tony Smith. And we won silverware in the Challenge Cup, and we won the League Leaders' Shield, but we were never quite good enough to win the grand final. I've already said earlier that, ironically, although I'm a bit bored sometimes watching Steve Price's teams, when you get to a final, maybe he does have the grit to win those.
He's already said this, Dennis. He's going around in circles today.
I know, but the point is, it's a trade-off, isn't it? It's a trade-off. Who wins the big matches whilst playing glorious rugby? It doesn't always.
And have you answered my question then? Would you say that if we were, would Tony Smith actually, do a better job with the team that we've currently got?
Be more enjoyable to watch.
Tony Smith was shown the door because they were bored of Tony Smith. He'd given his speech too many times in the dressing room. I'd like Ian Watson.
Ian Watson's an interesting one, yeah. He seems to get more out of the players that he's got, whereas at the minute, I don't think we're getting the best out of the players that we've got.
Going back to Daniel's soundbite, I think this is the first soundbite I've heard Daniel sitting on the fence. I mean, pretty much every team came with a plus and a negative, didn't it? He wasn't really sure... who was going to end up in that top four? I think there's only six teams now that could actually finish in the top four.
Yeah.
And I think those six teams are actually sitting in 1-6 already. And that's Catalans, Wigan, Warrington, Saints, Leeds, and possibly Castleford. But Huddersfield are a mediocre team. Hull are shit. Salford have got players. Wakefield are wank. And Hull KR are bobbins.
I'd go slightly the other way. I think Castleford will get a hiding by Saints today. And I think the sixth team is possibly Huddersfield, not Castleford. I think Huddersfield play above the weight, whereas Castleford will be up and down.
I don't think
you're far wrong, Rob. I don't think you're far wrong at all.
I actually think Leeds haven't got much to show after last week. It'd be interesting to see, by the time this podcast goes out, we'll know whether they've beaten Wigan. But all of a sudden, it's looking like a very depleted competition of who's got, could make that top four.
I was just going to say to him, I think he struggles to identify anyone with consistency because we've got all this new game and what have you. So that's quite understandable. I think he identified in his first bit that squad depth will definitely come into it. But Daniel, come on, up your game. I've seen some of your Twitter comments. Jesus Christ, talk about swearing. You don't mince your words there. Let's hear you say, nail your colours to the flagpole, mate.
Predictions.
Good afternoon to you. Earlier on today, apparently, a woman rang the BBC and said she heard that there was a hurricane on the way. Well, if you're watching, don't worry, there isn't.
I'll predict Warrington, but can I do it with a caveat, please?
Okay, no game next weekend with the Challenge Cup taking place and with Wire receiving a bye. The players group get to put their feet up, as do we, with no podcast next week. However, we'll turn our attentions to Wire's next fixture when we take on Wakefield Trinity at the Halliwell Jones on Saturday the 29th of August for a home fixture with no fans. Wakefield are awful at the moment, aren't they? They are absolutely obliterated by Catalans this weekend. It's a win-win-win, isn't it, for Wire? Doesn't matter even if we aren't playing very well. We'll comfortably beat Wakefield at home.
It is 2 weeks away, so they might get a couple of players back, but you've got to say we should be winning that game. We'll probably make it difficult for ourselves, but we should be winning that game by 20 to 30 points, shouldn't we?
Well, Price keeps going on about this versatility, and as we've seen before, he doesn't rotate his squad. Is this an opportunity now to see Leilani Latu and, maybe Luther Burrell? Is this the opportunity to put them on?
We've got a week's rest. I don't see that he'll rest anybody for the next game. He might rotate one player on the bench, maybe. Yeah. We'll see.
Dennis, you've sort of laid back in your chair there. We're not quite finished. Are you going for Wakefield or Warrington? What are you going for?
I've written down Warrington 44, Wakefield 12. I don't really think Wakefield have got much of a chance. I think if Chris Chester can, get a bit of steel back into the players that he has got left,
then maybe the scoreline might be a bit closer. But no, I think it'd be pretty one-sided.
Mm. Okay, it's a wrap. As I've just mentioned, the podcast is taking a well-deserved break. We'll be back on Monday, the 1st of September. During the podcast absence, please tweet your thoughts to @whatbevan. You can email to @whatbevan@gmail.com, or if you feed your kids three times a week from the chip shop or wash down with fizzy blue drink, there's always Facebook. So from a man with hellish good looks, who leads a monk's lifestyle and who hasn't been involved in a monk's chain since he invited the vicar down for tea before the lockdown, it's a departing hallelujah from Sam.
All the best.
And from our very own podcast presenter, sporting a podcast group number of 666. It's an inferno, fire of brimstone, place of torment. Hurrah from Dennis.
Seeing you.
I'm Rob London. I'm off to sin, as it's my destiny to go on my journey to hell. But I will be travelling business class. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say?
Dante's Inferno there, was it not? You didn't quite get it.
What? What's going on about?
And your journey to hell.
I can only hear through one ear. Hello? Hello? In jail, we can go toe-to-toe in the middle of a sale. Fucking with me cause I'm a teenager with a little bit of gold and a pager. Searching my car, looking for the product. Thinking every nigga is selling narcotics. You'd rather see me in the pen than me and Lorenzo rolling.